Hey everybody, what is good? I hope all is well with you. I am just thawing out and getting myself dry after getting soaked this evening. I'm not happy with the weather, but that's another discussion. If you've just locked in and signed in with us this evening, welcome, and we appreciate your presence here. So welcome to our 11th podcast episode, 11th podcast, can you believe it? This one is a second panel. With this week we've got two guests. I'm going to say only, but not only, because they're two very special people. Myself and Ivan Tees, a host, and also the technology man, is going to take you on a journey this evening. So our first guest, which we're going to introduce, is Essie Ayensu, who first time guest to the CSA project, but is also someone who's been working in the profession, working with young people for over 20 years. And she's worked in the capacity of mentoring and taking care of health and safety with young people. And actually, if I may say so myself, she's someone that I've learned a lot from and modeled a lot of my practices around working with not only young people, but just adults. So someone that I would say professionally and as a friend, I've looked up to and learned many things from. So big up, it's an honor to have Essie as our first time guest. And then we have our regular veteran guest here, Andre Bright, Chief CEO, boss man, manager, whatever, of the project Become Immersive, including one of his projects, Become Talks, which is really about fostering positive conversations within the Black community. Andre is also an advocate for conversations around the rebranding of Africa and getting people to look at Africa in a very different perspective and just an angle. So at this point, I just want to say, let's put our hands together for our new guests, Essie and Andre.
I know you're welcome. We're all clapping.
Thank you, Alex.
No, you're most welcome. And we're going to kick it off. Before we start digging deep, we're going to kind of kick it off with a little fun question for both of you. So I would ask you to relay one funny memory that you have in relation to Black History Month, a Black History Month, or an incident that might have happened. Just get one funny incident.
One funny incident.
And while you're thinking about it, maybe I should kick off. Ivan, do you have one?
Oh, I definitely do.
While we give them time to think, do you want to go and break down what your one is?
When I was younger, and this is no coincidence, me being on this podcast right now, with Alex being at the school that I was at and him having influence, me getting into dancing, seeing Alex dancing, being like, what the hell are you doing? And he was like, I'm dancing. I was like, you have to show me. Went through years of doing that. And when Black History Month would come up, we would always do some sort of dance or something. And it was a whole day thing preparing for like an evening show. And I remember while we were practicing the dancing, the girls in the school were practicing their dance right in front of us. I remember we got no work done or no dance rehearsals done because we were just sitting there like that, like young boys just like couldn't believe it. Then that evening, they said, oh, when we do this routine, everyone gets a chance to do a move. So I was like, okay, this sounds cool. So then it was my turn. So I stand up in front of this room. There's like maybe 150 people in there. And I'm like, probably like the second white boy in the room or something like that. There's like two or three white boys in this room. And I walk up on stage and do this move that Alex taught me where you kind of have your arm hanging like this and you knock it and it spins around and it looks like your arm's broken. And I remember I did it and the whole room just went quiet. And then suddenly the room erupted. You could see chairs being thrown across the theater. It just went mental. And literally that was it. The dance was over. Nothing happened. Nothing constructive happened from that moment.
Wow, you dug in the crates, because remember when you initially told me that I had to think about it, and then I was like, oh yeah, I do remember. I remember some of the older lot saying, oh, as well when you didn't move. I remember that moment. You
know? I still do it now in clubs, but it doesn't have the same effect.
Yeah. Well, okay, so my one, again, just giving Andre and Essie a bit of time, is Essie, do you remember when the school caretaker cooked jerk chicken? Right, okay, so check it. So the school that we worked at was quite a multicultural school, but it was still maybe more towards more majority white, especially at that time. And I remember the caretaker offered to cook jerk chicken as part of the school lunchtime menu. So there's me thinking Caribbean. I'm like, yeah, you're about to go and taste my food now. Yeah. And the kids are all getting inquisitive and they were queuing up. Yeah, have some jerk chicken. I must have been one of the first ones to bite into it. and the thing was hot. So I'm thinking, hang on, is this me? Because I'm supposed to be representing my culture, but right now I can't take it. So I'm sitting there, I've got tears in my mouth, I'm trying to just keep my composure. I'm like, yeah, man, good food, jerk chicken. I'm dying. I see the kids were dying. I said, bruv, are you trying to murder these kids? I don't know what happened. He must have just got a bit too happy with the jerk and just murdered off the kids.
Yeah, four kids died today eating 100% jerk chicken.
Oh, I never forget that day.
It was a bit too much for you, Alex. A bit too much, I think.
It was too much for everybody. I see everybody was struggling, but no one wanted to admit that they were struggling. That's what everyone was struggling.
Well, for me, the memory goes way back. To the late 70s.
Okay, talk.
And it was Black History Month. Although at that time I didn't know that that was what we were celebrating. I just knew I wanted to wear my African attire on that day. I said, right, what could I pick to wear? And I had my afro out, combed it all out nicely, had my Ghanaian attire, went into school. Now, the school I was in, the primary school I was in, there's only two blacks in the whole of the school. So you can imagine when I then came in with my attire, the whole of the school turned around and looked at me like, what are you wearing? And what have you done with your hair? Because usually I was wearing braids. So I had a mass of people surrounding me, touching my hair, touching my outfit. I felt, whoa, what is this? They had never seen anything like it before. And I was so shocked because at home and in our own, you know, parties and everything else, that's what we wore. It wasn't anything new, but just the whole, you know, reaction I got when I got into school, it stunned me, took me back. And that was in the late 70s in East London as well. So yeah, that was a big memory for me then. Big memory.
That's crazy. Yeah, I'm sure. And anyone who's grown up in East London in the late 70s and 80s will know. Will know for sure.
Absolutely.
Andre, your time.
Yeah, I've just been thinking about it, and I think mine, I hope you can hear me anyway, but I think mine is kind of similar to yours, Alex, because I was working in, it's actually quite recent, actually, a few years ago. And I was working for a company. I was in the D&I group, and they were like, oh, it's Black History Month. Can we do something?
So I've got loads of lists of people we can do, bring in activities, places we can go. Basically, through rules of, what can I say? Valuation, maybe? It got whittled down to a cook-along. So it's basically ended up for Black History Month. The event that they chose from my very long list was to cook jollof rice online and have it as kind of like a Zoom thing. And I just remember getting the email back and thinking, what? Like that was, for me, that was like I didn't really know how to respond to that. But yeah,
and you know, 99% of the people just got Uncle Ben's on the corner as well. Some
of them just like, yeah.
And you can never taste it to see. Actually, is this legit jollof or get off?
It sounds like a Silit Bang advert or something.
Yeah, like, what kind of rice? This bullet situation. Okay, that's funny. And by the way, peoples, apologies for my voice. I've been, since last Wednesday, I lost my voice and I'm actually sounding better than before. Before, you wouldn't have even heard me, but yeah.
Sounded like Mrs. Doubtfire, honestly.
Mrs. Doubtfire. Okay, so apologies, Mrs. Doubtfire taking over the session today. Okay, so let's dig right in. Black History Month, you know, I would say over the times and based on my own personal journey or experience of having this conversation, Black History Month is one of those things that even though it's been around in various capacities for a while, it still to this day generates lots of different sorts of conversations. Some people, both within the community, within the Black community and outside of the Black community, have very varying opinions on Black History Month, its validity, its use. So I guess maybe we should start off with a question. Is Black History Month still relevant? And who wants to kick it off?
Is it relevant? I would say it is. I feel as though it is relevant. However, to whom is the question? For me personally, looking at Black History Month, it didn't tell my story or the story I understood from my own family. If I talk about my mum's journey here, it didn't talk about her journey. Arriving here, you know, 14 years old, living in with an English family and going to school here, coming from a wealthy family, and the eldest child would go abroad to be educated. I didn't see that story or any elements of that story. Yeah, but for me, it's like, why have we arrived here? How have we arrived here? How have our generations arrived here? What's the history behind that? Mm-hmm. And tell the whole story. I can sit, as I said, to talk my mum, then my mother's mum, you know, what's the history there? How come the draw to the UK for us? You know, so we tell parts of the story, as you're saying, and we don't tell the whole story. And there is parts of the story which, yeah, we can celebrate, you know, and there's parts of the stories like, we don't really want to go there. We don't really talk about that, but we need to. We need to.
All right. So, okay, there's a certain point that I'm going to come back to. Based on what you said, I just want to get some of Andre's initial thoughts and then we'll attempt to tie them back in.
Yeah, no, I was actually just going to say I agree with Essie in terms of history being incomplete. It's something I've always considered because it's come a long way from Negro History Week, right? 1926 or something like that, and then Black History Month in America, and then it came to UK. And now there's a few countries who do it, but not every country celebrates it. So I guess for me, it's like there is the element of whose history, like you mentioned before. But then there's also an element for me about what history and how far back it goes as well. I think that's something where there's like a missing link there. We only really talk about kind of like the slavery to now part. And we don't really talk about anything that happened before that. And if you think about the breadth of history and contributions, because really a lot of the attempts are to share knowledge and awareness about Black contributions to history. Each country that has it has had an attempt to do that in their own way. But it's only starts at a certain point. And if you start a story from the chains, I think for me, is you're missing a whole part of the fuller picture. So especially if, like, for example, Essie, you mentioned working with children, and Alex, we're around young people all the time, and you can see that knowing the full contribution of history can really have an effect on your self-esteem. It can have an effect on how you stand in a space and what kind of contributions you make now, knowing that your ancestors and stuff had made contributions as well. Like, it all has an impact on value. So for me, it's still relevant, but I just feel like there's bits that we could be exploring more, and there's people who are doing really great work to make that happen, to make that more household information, but I just feel like there's still a way to go.
Amazing. And I think there's something that you said there, Andre, about when the story starts from chains. What sort of impact do you think that has on the wider Black community when maybe the story that's been told starts from chains?
I think it depends on if the individual is aware that it doesn't or not. I think if they aren't aware that it doesn't start from chains, then I feel like that can have a limiting effect on their own self-belief and stuff in terms of that. Like, I think for me, I realize now it's a privilege, the knowledge that I've walked into or accrued over the years, to be able to know that that's not the case. I have a direct relationship with Africa, for example, the books I've read, the people I've met. So I'm aware that it isn't. And so if someone was to ask me about anything, I can talk about Nok civilization. I can talk about any of the, where we call Ghana, all of their, like Ashanti, all of those kind of contributions, the Niger Delta, a lot of people talk about Kemet and all that kind of stuff. There's all kinds of stuff that happened hundreds, thousands of years ago that we had contributions for that I can pick from at any given moment. And so if I'm in a room and I hear someone saying something that's just plain false and it has kind of like a limiting view, I can correct them or I can give them another perspective. But I'm very aware because I've been in situations where people aren't privy to that information, that you can find yourself in a bit of a corner because you feel like frustrated because there should be more, like this can't possibly be my history, but you don't realize it's not the only history. Do you know what I'm saying? I'm sure we've all been around people who get frustrated because they feel like they're pushed down or they're oppressed or anything like that, but they don't have another narrative to counter that.
Sure.
You know?
Sure. So,
yeah.
Interesting. And I mean, from Essie, from your perspective, being, you know, doing the work that you've done and seeing, you know, young people at close range, how do you feel not telling the whole story has had an impact, or do you feel potentially has an impact, or do you, would you say you've even seen firsthand how this lack of information or this wider inclusive information has impacted the way young people navigate, let's say, the education system?
I mean, I think for me, it starts at home.
Right.
And maybe starting to work in education 20 years ago that I have been to now, I would say that in our communities, there's been a lot of negative change because of the loss of that identity. And, you know, for me, I would say when I first started and even in my time, the values and the morals and that in our communities were very strong because the culture too was very strong, and the knowledge there was probably very strong, and the understanding of our language was very strong and that. And as time has gone, that there's been a loss somewhere there. And we talk about assimilating here. What has then been stripped because of that? And I've seen behavior changes, negative behavior changes, where I would maybe meet with parents so many years ago were like-minded, like myself. Now I'm having conversations with parents in the same communities where we're struggling to meet minds now. Why is that?
Yeah.
So, and I find that a lot of parents too feel that they need advice and support themselves, which is something that I said, oh, in my time, I wouldn't have seen someone in my community reaching out like that for advice on really parenting or the struggles, because it was very much you're an outsider. We don't tell you. It's not like that so much now. So it's complex, I would say. So looking at Black History Month, it is not just a month for me. It's something that should be ingrained in the curriculum. It should be everywhere around us. Sure. So I've seen a lot of changes and it's been sad to see. And although you may work in an environment that becomes more strict, you're then fighting something else. And it's a constant fight, which then there's a lot of energy lost in that. And it makes people just want to up and leave and go back home and say, you know, there's no point fighting a lost battle here. Let's go back home because you're around it all the time. Then it's Absolutely. Not just a month. It's you're living with it. You know, my brother lives abroad. He lives in Ghana. You know, he's raised here. He lives in Ghana with his family. And that's his environment. It's not about Black History Month, is it? He lives it and breathes it. So I think it's by now we should have gone beyond talking about just the month of October. We should have been talking about how it's in the curriculum and, you know, and in some parts of education in schools and that, they're doing better than others, I would say.
The closest the curriculum I got in my school is they made us watch Roots, and they thought that constituted for an education into Black history. And all I remember is a lot of kids took it as an opportunity to laugh at the, and you know what, one of my favorite things in history was when they wheeled that big ass TV in, because I was like, oh yeah, like we're going to watch something. I remember them putting Roots on. I remember just feeling weird the entire time. It was like, it was just the most unusual thing. Yeah. So that, I don't know how far the curriculum's come, but that was, thankfully, I had a good community.
Well, do you know what? It fosters a couple of thoughts from what I'm hearing. So first of all, the first one is, Essie, you mentioned the word retreat. And I think retreat is a very interesting word for me, because I've often used this in various capacities, including one of the things that I've mentioned is that I felt this year, it felt like, and I don't know if it's just because of where I am living in London, and I know each borough would provide a different experience, it didn't feel like there was much of a buzz for Black History Month. And my suspicion around that was around maybe because there's been so much, in the last 2 years, we've seen a lot of intense political conversations, both online and just in the general society around particular issues, including race, culture, and other kind of pressing topics. It feels like there's now been a bit of a unspoken retreat where everyone's just gone into the echo chamber and people kind of don't speak about things. And it's not that it's, and they don't speak about it, not because they now understand that this is not appropriate to talk about or because they feel a certain way. It's just more people just haven't got the energy. So it feels like for in different communities, for different reasons, people are executing the same sort of behavior, retreat. And I feel like that feels like an ongoing theme for me when we're talking about society. I think it also, the other thought that I wanted to share, and maybe I'm going to pose a question to both of you, is Black History Month something that's exclusively celebrated, or is it something that's more inclusive?
Okay, first time, when you asked me to be on this topic here, I was gassed. I was like, yeah, we need to talk about this thing. And part of it was because I've had this long, it's kind of like the flip side of what I said earlier, who is it for? Right now, I kind of feel like it has become commercialized, but not by us. Like the idea of, I know so many people who October is their cash cow. Do you know what I mean? October, you get booked out for the whole month. As soon as 1st of November comes, silence.
Right.
And I feel like, for me, it's kind of like, I don't want to necessarily go down this way, but the question that comes into my mind is, who is it for now? And maybe we need to do a retreat, but go into like a silo of our own to decide how to reclaim it. Do you know what I mean? As a community.
Interesting. Go on, Effie.
No, I was going to say something along the lines of what Andre has said, because I'm just going to go back to thinking of other communities where they celebrate. We've had Diwali, we have Eid, and they do it as a community. And it doesn't feel as though, maybe to them it does, but for me, that is commercialized so much. It's theirs, and it's theirs to celebrate. And looking back at our history, I would like to look back at our history and celebrate our history, and then talk about the negatives as well, but celebrate where we need to, but be in control of that, because right now, yes, a lot of anything that's Black is commercialized. It's the in thing right now, you know. Back in my time when I was going out clubbing, that was just a long time ago, it would be very much Caribbean music. So I would go out with my friends who are Caribbean background, and we had a lot of Africans then that didn't want to say that they were African. They would say they were Caribbean, and they would give me a different surname when I know they are not. But so
Caribbeans was cool.
Caribbeans were cool and being African wasn't. It just wasn't in my time. Yeah. It was so uncool. Don't go around calling yourself Essie. What is that? You know? You're a Sharon or you're a Debbie or whatever you are. And that's what it was then. I was clueless as to why, you know. And then I would be with my friends. We would go out. And it was reggae, raga, all that music. It wasn't the music we would hear now. So it's like, again, it's another phase we are going through, you know, and it's commercialized. That's not the kind of celebrations and history that I would like to think about, because that's too commercial for me. If I go on Capital, I can hear, you know, a lot of South African music, Ghanaian music, Nigerian music, different African music. Yes, it's being listened to. One aspect, people say that's great, but we're not in control of that. Our communities are not in control of that.
That's a really interesting point, for two reasons. One, because, okay, so yeah, I'll make my two points. First point is, I think I said this to you, Ivan, that maybe I didn't, that I went to a Black History Month event in Stratford, which was, and it was a night with Getz. Now, Getz is, in terms of the young generation, huge. It's a big icon in, you know, in underground rap world. The room was, what, 15% filled. Nobody knew. I was going there embracing myself to be turned away because I only found about it the night before. So I was expecting there's going to be a whole bag of kids. And actually, I was with Ivan that day.
Well, you went to great lengths to get there as well. The whole day you were like, oh, I need to leave soon. And how long is it going to take to get there? So you were really invested.
Yeah, I don't know if you remember, I was saying, but if there's a whole bag of kids, I'm going to go home. Because I just had this impression that it's going to be just overloaded. And I just weren't in the mood for that. But then when I got there, there was like 15% filled. And it was mostly adults who you can see clearly have an organization. So they're probably coming down to get some knowledge that they can take back to their work. And so I was like, yo, what's going on? What is happening? And the other thing that you said there is, there's this love emotionally, and I've had to really try to understand this myself. There is a love-hate relationship with the aspect of Black culture being accessible. And I say love-hate because I remember in the 90s, for example, there was a time when R&B and hip hop was still very much, in order for you to hear that music, you had to really be in circles where people were avid listeners. So anybody who maybe you would deem as an outsider, so an outsider could be someone who could be a white person, it could be an Asian person, or just someone who wasn't necessarily in those circles, you recognize that for that person to put themselves there, they would have had to work hard to infiltrate, to get into that space, to know that music. And there was something quite prideful about that. It's almost like, wow, this is amazing. But then when it started to get commercial, I was happy that people were starting to appreciate en masse. But then what I was beginning to see, it was almost roller coasting into something else. I'm like, I don't know how I feel about this now, because even though you want it to be accessible and respected, it almost felt like the momentum is gone now. Or not the momentum's gone, but it's almost like, this is almost like, I don't know, no disrespect, but it's like a Spice Girls. It's just, it's happening over there. It's not this exclusiveness. But it's like, if you want this, you have to be in this space and you have to almost respect that space. It almost felt like it became quite disposable with the many other music that was kind of disposable. Do you know what I'm saying? And I've never had a chance to really fully understand emotionally what was going on there for me.
Do you know, can I just add a little something to that, just because the thoughts on my end were, as you were speaking, but then when you were just talking, I was just like, mind overload. You know the term bias for us, right? Or like bias, FUBU, right?
Yes.
The whole idea of that was building structure by a community that the community feeds into, and they have autonomy over it. All the profits are kept within the environment, all that kind of stuff. The problem with that system is that it doesn't scale, right? So the next step is by us for everyone. And that's something where you have a really big impact on the wider culture, right? And you're affecting social norms and you're influencing people on a global scale. But then what I've noticed is that I feel like we've almost skipped some of those phases now, and we're kind of at a by everyone for everyone stage, even though it's culture. Like, we don't anymore necessarily have the narrative. You know what I'm saying? The power over it. And so, like, I've been into a few spaces now where there's a lot of Black history, and there's not necessarily a problem with who the face is, but just after I see a pattern of this happening a lot, the question starts to go in my mind. Like, there's a lot of organizations and teachers and all that kind of stuff who are not connected to the actual product or what we're talking about. And then the people who are, like Tony Warners and the Robin Walkers and the Carlos and all that kind of stuff, nobody knows about. They're so like, they're so down there, they're so ingrained. But they've been running it for like 30, 40, 50 years. But then now we're in a stage where someone who doesn't have that knowledge, but just has maybe marketing experience or knows how to use TikTok, some all of a sudden becomes a person that people go to for the knowledge. Right. And I feel like there's a risk in that, in terms of that snowball you were talking about, where if there isn't something where there's a need for the root of some of this information, then it can spiral off into anything. And I think that's maybe where my initial gut reaction came from when you first asked the question about Black History Month being relevant, is that that question of like relevant for who and how is it being used? Because what I wouldn't want to happen is to find ourselves in another kind of like minstrel show scenario where you have some people who are basically doing caricatures of what is actually like real history, real culture, but then almost bastardizing it or commercializing it to be this other thing that happens to be marketable. So I think that's where I'm at with it.
Interesting. It's like, it's like the representation. It's like the people who are representing, like you're saying about the market inside of it. But the problem with that in some ways is that they're learning from a textbook almost. So they're all learning what diversity is like, doing unconscious bias training at work. And the person running the session doesn't have any real background in unconscious bias other than doing a training session that they learned from someone else, So you're in there and then the conversation never really gets to the true what unconscious bias is and what the real effects of it is. It's normally just this glossed over kind of LinkedIn learning event sort of style thing. So the people who are representing, they might be good at marketing, and it's also probably that they're given the position probably because the deep rooted issues that we're talking about right now, the fact that they're given those positions a lot of the time, they just haven't got the credentials or knowledge to really teach what you're saying, the true history, the true conversation, or lead the true conversation.
And I'm going to put this question based back, off the back of what Ivan just said, but also I think it leads smoothly into our next question. So, I mean, we recognize the need for more knowledge around the legacies of Black history. We know we're kind of speaking about that as a theme. And we also recognize that it should be taught in education. I think there's still kind of variations of perspective of how that might look like in the education system. I'm also recognizing that there seems to be in more recent times more kind of efforts to do things within the work spaces. But look, I guess my question to all of you is that a good idea? Is that tokenism? I mean, how do people feel about this in the workspace? I mean, I guess I have my opinions on this, but I'd like to hear what everyone else is thinking.
I don't know how far you could go in the workspace. That's the thing. Because at the end of the day, you're at work. You know, if you're self-employed or, you know, you're on your own business and fine, you pretty much govern what can be celebrated and done. but depending on the work environment, you're kind of led. You may give your opinion, but you're really just led, and you may not want to join in what has been suggested.
Sorry, yeah.
As well. So I almost feel like it'll become like, what do they call it? World Book Day, where you just dress up in caricatures, you know? That's not what I would want. You know, oh. I know in education I've experienced where we had a day where you had some girls braiding and you had some of us wearing traditional garments from our own, you know, home countries, and food is brought in. I know a lot of primary schools do that with the children. Parents do that. And they kind of do it as a mix where teachers are involved. So I don't know if you can separate it in a school environment, but in a workplace where it's an office, as I say, that for me would be difficult, because I don't know how much voice you would get and how far do you go, because it's political as well. Yeah. You know, it can be, it is very political. And there's, you know, if you think of politics and strong opinions, and, you know, it causes a great divide and causes a lot of friction as well. So how far are you going to go with it? You know,
and
just leave it on the doorstep. You know, you're having real serious discussions and, you know, from different groups as well, different ethnic groups, because we can go into the whole Nigerian Ghanaian history, and you can go into, you know, other histories, and where there's a lot of politics behind it. It's for me, again, it's so complex. And when you say black, who? Because Asians should also be celebrating in this Black History Month. It's fully inclusive of them. It shouldn't omit them as well. That's a difficult one for me. I work, obviously, in education and have done for years. I've seen it with the children celebrating and the staff, you know, included in that. But outside of that, in an office environment, I guess if anybody has worked in that environment, have they experienced it?
Was it a good experience? So, like, I mean, obviously, we work together in school and in education spaces, and we saw some of the black kids, and sometimes we were both quite involved in the processes and delivering stuff. But what I find as a pattern is, so at an educational level, there's kind of attempts to educate, do some inclusive activities, but as soon as people enter into adulthood and the workplace, then the divide happens. So then the questions are around the idea of education. I guess this maybe ties into maybe some of Andre's queries that he's put out there. What's the purpose of it? Who is it for? Because it's almost like, for some people, is it just about getting people to taste some food? Is it more about just teaching one or two cool facts? Is it just a moment of titillation as a black person to feel a very shallow sense of pride at a very shallow level, but no real further depth? Like, or is there something more deeper, more consistent that when you start educating at a lower age, it can filter up into adulthood? I mean, again, I don't think this is a question that can be answered now, but I think we can at least throw them out there. Andre, what are you thinking?
Yeah, I've got some thoughts on it, just because I did. I worked with an organization called African History Project, and we worked together to create a white paper on Pan-African citizenship. And some of it touched on what kind of things you can do at home, but some of it also worked on what you can do as a business, and not necessarily in an office in a physical space, but as a business, things you can do. And what I found is that if you genuinely want to have an impact or create change, you'll show in what efforts you make. So there's a level of like, okay, so let's have a little workshop in the office, right? That's going to be very surface level stuff. But if you really want to make change, you'll probably partner with an organization and help fund them doing local community projects. In a specific community around where your business is. You might go into schools, which you know are a certain demographic, and do workshops and let them know that you exist and what impact they can have in your industry. You can, I don't know, like I'm in architecture, so a lot of my stuff is around property and stuff like that. So you might do, I don't know, again, open houses so that people can come into your space and you can communicate with them. Because I find one of the problems with businesses is they keep themselves completely separate to communities. Mm. And for me, one of the things that doesn't need to be in October, this can be just any time. And really for me, when I know it's serious when it's part of their values and not just their marketing, is that they'll make a consistent effort to create links between the communities they want to have impact in and the output of their company. Mm-hmm. So that for me is like a tangible, like pragmatic way that organizations can get involved in making change in that sense. I know there was a lot of stuff over the last couple of years where people were criticized for doing the black square and stuff. The black square doesn't do anything. Do you know what I mean?
It looks like a screensaver.
I thought my phone was broke. I was scrolling for ages and I was like, what the hell? So yeah, they just confused me. Yeah, I think from my point of view, I thought about this a little bit over the years, and I actually had a lot of hope deep down for where I felt that businesses could be something that could actually help bring about a lot more change. I think the problem with businesses and a lot of the impact that they're having around the world anyway, in a lot of different subjects with climate change and everything like that, I just don't think companies are aligned in a way where I think the maybe the bottom half of the company, like you were saying, Andre, about linking their values and stuff like that. And me doing a HR podcast, I'm seeing so much more of that. And since the George Floyd incident, a lot of companies have now opened their eyes to it. Now, have they opened their eyes because it's what they should do, or they've worked out that it's a good angle to spin because a lot of, say, upper bosses and stuff are starting to say, you know, these are the sort of things, just like climate change and stuff, these are the kind of things we need to start hitting. We need to be seen to at least be doing something. I think for me, on the most basic level, let's say, when you talk about business, we always think about these huge conglomerates and you're working in an office in London. But what about just as basic as working in Tesco's? And I'm still working this out myself, but the way I see it is that as long as, and I think this is super critical, that you have a management team that are cool with people having good conversations, and there's like an agenda being pushed down on them that where they should be having these kind of discussions and stuff. What I love on a basic level is just you at work, you're put into scenarios that make you uncomfortable, especially when it comes to putting you in next to people that are from different countries and different religions and different things, and you sometimes have to do a task together that's dependent on your literal you getting paid that month. So if you're like, oh, I'm not going to work this guy for whatever reason, but like, all right, cool, enjoy your job center, whatever, see you later sort of thing. So I don't want that to be, it should never be a monetary thing. No, if you don't be nice to this person, you're going to get sacked, whatever, which is kind of true. But it's having a management that kind of want to have discussions and have people working together. So I think just in the raw basic thing of what I'm trying to say is what I like businesses is that you sometimes have to work with people that you might not have worked with before. And it forces in you into scenarios that you just in general life wouldn't be in. You know, you might see people in the street and you might say, hey, whatever, but you're actually doing projects together. Where I think there's a big issue is what I was saying about managers and stuff is that you might want to do some sort of diversity conversation. And unfortunately, a lot of these businesses, they're like, let's do some diversity training. And all it is what you shouldn't say. And people start coming out with these weird like lines of what's racist and what's not. And it just, the conversation just completely gets ridiculous. I've been in it myself. I've seen it. And it's not the intended purpose.
But then I guess I didn't mean to cut you.
No, please, go on.
I was gonna say, from what you're saying and what Andre was saying though, it sounds like what I'm also hearing is about building relationships from corporate to community in a sense, and within a workplace, like you say, managers helping to foster relationships amongst staff, in a sense that what I take from that is there is ideas around what we think could help positively, but the truth of the matter is, in terms of in our lifetime, this is still new territory. So we don't know for sure that this will work. But at least it sounds like from what's been said is if you're going to engage in this, relationships has to be the first place, which is then going to be a, it was almost like you enter into this space of relationship, and within this space, you understand that it's going to be uncomfortable. Maybe you're not quite clear on what that discomfort might look like. There also has to be a long-term commitment if we're talking from a corporation point of view. And the reason why long-term commitment is important is because from any corporation, when you're talking business plans, there's always business plans that have long-term trajectories. So
can I jump in? Because it's something Ivan said, just in regards of, and you brought it, Tesco's, okay? Because I can, and I'm sure a lot of you can, look back and think there was a time in Tesco's I would go there and not find any food for my community at all. Okay, so we're looking at progression. For me, you know, if we're still sitting here talking about Black History Month, it's like the two or three aisles in Tesco's, we've got the multicultural food, we have it for a month and then we take it away and it's back to what it was. That's why I don't feel we've progressed. If we're sitting here talking about still just 1 month where it's Black History, we've not grown from that yet. You know, the supermarkets have, yes, the you know, population, they're serving the population, but still they didn't really have to. You still got the markets there to go and buy your yam and all of those things, but
I can still,
with a bit more money, still go and get that in Tesco's. You know, there's a Ghanaian chili. I never thought I would see it in Tesco's. And I stood there staring at it on the shelf. It's there, you know. Never did I think the day I would see that. And some of the drinks that we would buy in Ghana, I'm going there and it's on in Tesco's, you know, whereas before it would be in the market. So in some ways, there has been progress. You know, that's not something that's just there for the month and it's taken away. It'd be silly to do that. And I think it's silly that we're only still celebrating just a month, October.
Right. So you're so, yeah. So
that's for
you,
for me. It so needs to be more than that.
It should be more than a month, or do you think it should be a constant? What are you leading to?
I think, okay, you can give it the month to really kick it off. But with the idea of, I don't know, like increasing that. A couple of months, you know, increasing that.
Maybe in the summer there's
events, but no, I don't see that ever happening. We'll just
get rid of the month and give me five things that ingrain it into culture in its entirety. You know, looking at Britain, what it is, and realizing how much, you know, multiculturalism built Britain. It's the backbone of Britain.
Absolutely.
What I love about Black History Month is just that I think it's just a good opportunity for all races and creeds to kind of, I don't know, learn from, I don't know, for me, it's been a good example over the years of something that happened that people can, I think everyone can get behind. But do I think it needs to be a month? No. Do I think it needs to be ingrained in everything we do without a shadow of a doubt?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Also about ourselves, yourselves, having an interest in.
Mm-hmm.
You don't wait for it and it's to come to you. Are you going out to seek it? You don't have to wait for October to go out and seek it. You know, with my children, what am I teaching them? I'm going to just wait for October and then it's going to be taught? No.
You've opened a can of worms. You've kind of...
We love worms.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. But it's not worms. This one is just a can of baked beet. No, it's not even a can of baked beet. you said something about being invested and wanting to. Now, I feel like we're moving smoothly into the idea of evolution moving forward. One of the questions I've often had, and I mean, like me and Ivan, we constantly, I think because we're doing this project together, we've found that the amount of time that we've spent going back and forth about this is massively increased. But one thing I would say to Ivan's credit is he is proactively interested. And if there's a concept, say, for example, which Ivan doesn't really understand, which to be honest with you, I haven't experienced that because from Ivan's perspective, and again, I'm talking about you while you're here, but you take something on with the idea that even if you don't get it, you're going to get it. So you sit with it rather than pushing back. And actually, it's been, you demonstrate something where learning can be very smooth. in terms of, well, just listen, take it on. Oh, interesting. And so I guess the point I'm now throwing at everybody here is, how do you make people, not even what, how do you persuade or how do you foster influence to make people want to be interested? Or how do you get to show and demonstrate that Black history is very much entrenched in the way British people live? Because I think that's what, within the Black community, that's what people are moving towards, is an idea that this isn't just about Black people migrating to this space. This is about, if you look at how British culture is today, you can trace it back to Black influences that has now affected how we all live. So how do we get to that place?
I think we've got to start with ourselves, man. I think there's still, it's similar to what I said at the beginning, I feel like there's still room to go. I think as a community, and
what do you mean yourself? What do you mean by that?
He means Michael Jackson, Man in the Mirror.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, I mean, in the sense of, like, I think I've realized that I've got to be very careful not to generalize based on the people I know, because most of the people I know are very aware. They're very active. They're very, I don't know what the words might be, right? But that's not necessarily the whole population, especially not the whole UK population, right?
Sure. I mean, as
Black people, we're not even, what, like 5% of the UK population. So we're still relatively small in that sense, but we have a lot of impact. But I think within us, we're not necessarily as some people just are cool with how things are for themselves, you know, their own individual lives. We've got enough going on in the world to not carry on this whole historical debate into everyday lives as well. Some people want the history and knowledge and stuff, but they don't know where to get it. Some people don't want anything to do with it. And I've realized that I've got to accept all of these different facets as well. But the ones who do want the knowledge, for me, my focus, especially with Become Immersive, is focusing on that group and being like, for the people who do want the knowledge, how can we disseminate that in a way that is accessible to them where they are? And starting with that. With that, you build the critical mass. You've got enough people who are aware of the history, they're correcting people when people give them wrong information, they're writing the letters to PMs, they're starting the businesses, they're doing all of that kind of stuff, they're having the influence. And it will get to the point where corporations and everything like that will have no choice but to pay attention. Because one of the things, I think I mentioned it to you guys before about the idea of cultural capital, is it is profitable to have a culturally diverse country, business, all of this kind of stuff. It's like, statistically speaking, it's profitable for that to be the case. So you're actually you're missing out in a detriment if you're not being open to these things. And so those companies who are actively resisting will end up finding themselves behind. And once they look to see why, they'll realize it's because they're not open to these things. And so I think for me as Andre, the man in the mirror, focusing on our company and then having that ricochet outwards.
Mango said in the comments, it seems there are powers making money off of our ignorance of who we are due to loss of identity. So that ties quite nicely into what you were saying.
Yeah, it's true.
Thanks for the comment.
Yeah, thank you, Mango. Essie, where's your head at with that?
Oh, where's my head at? Again, do I want to stay here to build that? Or would I like to retreat home and, you know, be in an environment that just accepts all of that anyway? I think that for me is, you know, being born and raised in that here, but so influenced and so around my community and feel so good about my community back home, my pull is more about being away. And for those who are open-minded enough to want to learn. If you're willing to learn, then fine. I'm not going to struggle with those who don't want to learn. I think that's where I'm at. So when you're talking about companies, again, the sad thing is, if it's good for them, if it's profitable, you know, yes, then they will be willing to possibly explore that. Other than that, just because of the good of mankind, no, we're not going to do it for that. It has to be a reward somewhere. And that for me is a shame, because if you know, I'm raising my children and they on and on, oh, I want to go to Ghana, and you know, we haven't been since COVID and everything else, and I love that because I know I work in an environment that I know some children, when I ask them, where are you from? Have you been there? No, there's no eagerness to even go there. So there's a loss there. And so you can teach them whilst they're young, but sometimes you get to an age, and I hope not, but sometimes you think you get to an age and said, maybe there's no coming back now. Because I know, Alex, we've had those discussions,
yes,
you know, as to whether or not, you know, you'd explore going back to your mother's homeland or your father's homeland, or even to Africa, even, you know, to even have that open for you. My connection is unstable at the moment, so
yeah, okay.
I go. But I just think,
I thought that was a part of what you were saying. I was like, well, okay, this is really deep.
Literally going, isn't she? She's just leaving.
But for me, I feel, you know, I've worked with young people, great young people, and I think I would want to take that energy home and work in a different environment now. And if you come to me when I'm home, you're obviously willing to want to know and, you know, gain knowledge that way.
And I think
for me, I want to retreat.
No, Essie, and I think that's important to share. And, you know, even within the Black community, the spaces, how people respond in the same situation is different, and everybody should have the space to respond in that way. I know when me and you have had these chats from 20 years ago, one of the things that was quite different was that, you know, being the Caribbean, and this is often a phenomenon within the Caribbean, a lot of us struggled with identity. Not everybody, but a lot of us did struggle, because maybe through maybe our family connections or upbringings or whatever, maybe when going home, you didn't feel necessarily at home. Maybe because of the assimilation that was happening even before we were born into the culture of assimilation. So then going back to the Caribbean was a struggle. And then Caribbeans didn't necessarily see you as one of theirs, because maybe you've assimilated more than you've realized. And so what we established when talking to each other is that we didn't have the same strong connection that maybe you had. You had a much more stronger sense of it, you know?
But I also feel that it's the same even when you go back to our countries in Africa, because you have communities that are born and raised in Ghana. I didn't go to school there. Whereas those who may be my age group that did school there, you know, they are a group in themselves. So when those who are raised here are going back home, not only Africans, I've got, you know, Caribbean friends of mine who decide to go and live in Ghana, they find their community there. Sure. You find your communities there and you find a way of fitting in, as we do so here as well. So even when you're going back home, it isn't, you are going to be, you know, seen as from there necessarily. You will find your community there and a way of settling that, you know, makes you happy and, you know, enables you to settle back home. Yeah. So I agree with exactly what you say, but that wouldn't deter me. That wouldn't stop me either.
And sure, I guess what I'm saying is that I think because what you had as a base was a lot more stronger and much more intentional, whereas I feel like that wasn't so intentional, the importance of it. So, you know, so I felt what I experienced, and maybe across some people within the Caribbean, you was Caribbean by default, and by, you know, you've grown in it, but there was no real active conversations. It was just, it was there. So you kind of are in it, but it wasn't an active, like, let me teach you, let me strategically teach you with the intention that when you hit this stage, this is what, this is likely to be how you would value this. It wasn't that, it was just, we're here. You're different because, oh, because I'm this. So you were almost having your own education. It's almost like for many of us, our education was probably the equivalent of having a cover teacher in school. Read page 37, answer the questions, and then hand it back in, as opposed to having a teacher who's presenting a lesson and teaching you actively to take you on a journey. Mm-hmm. And so I do think there's a difference in that, even in that legacy, there's a difference.
That is interesting.
But my thoughts on, you know, the evolution of like sharing black history, I think that, funny enough, memes and social media. So funny enough, meeting people where they are. One thing I found is my daughter watches a hell of a lot of YouTube shorts and stuff like that. And even myself, I've seen things where black creators have been creating content that sometimes borderline, like, oh my God, I can't believe you're a black person doing something that's making me feel uncomfortable, like watching it. But it's great because it's like, it forces, it's where people are, first of all. And sometimes, you know, you go look, like you were saying, you have to kind of go and look for the information. Well, this is why I think it needs to be in the mediums that people are absorbing. And it's like, for example, we talked a little while ago about Caribbean people coming on the TV and back in the day with the music and stuff like that. Well, that's something that's been controlled since then. Like we talked about now, how suddenly it gets commercialized. Well, I think now just more space on TV, but also on social media, like black creators and being pushed to the front, if that makes sense, or at least given an even opportunity. But yeah, that for me, that I know it sounds really basic, like, oh, the internet, social media. But I honestly do think I've seen some people, and is it the gentleman, is it Buddha? What was his name? The guy that we were looking at who's doing the rapping recently. I'm lobotomizing my mind. The guy we're talking about maybe getting on the show.
Badder.
But yeah. And people like him, who's just doing like a crazy job. So for me, that's the best way that I think, because it's meeting people where they are.
Yes, totally. And the thing is, never underestimate the power of social media, because I do also think that through social media, a lot of access of black knowledge, particularly if we're talking around, say, the legacy of slavery, a lot of this was through the social media. Before then, you would have been a highly motivated academic who would have probably gone to the British Library. But I haven't been to the British Library. And even when you go to the British Library, you need to know the authors and what books to read to really get into that space. So it would have been quite exclusive. Whereas social media, even though sometimes the information can be simplified and maybe sometimes oversimplified, at least the access to knowledge is there. So social media has done many, many things. And it's that complex thing of, even though we understand that the platforms are essentially be owned by people who may not have the interest of black community, you can still find positives in that.
It's sifting through the fake news and having a little bit more of your head on your shoulders, isn't it? Because anyone can go into social media now and look at things and get the wrong end of the stick, but
you can also get some good stuff.
Exactly. And it's about being able to like just have a little bit of a head on your shoulders. But it's also the basic thing is that you watch something, you think and then you go and learn about it, or you question it, and it's the same as if when your neighbor says something and you're like, he's talking shit, that's not true, is it? All right, quickly get on Google, you know. So you know, it's that same thing, but it's treating it the same thing, same way.
Okay, wrapping this up, because it's over an hour already.
Yeah.
I want to ask evolutions. What does evolution of Black History Month look like for both of yourself, SC and Andre?
Go ahead, Andre. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, for me, it looks like, we talked about it a little bit before, but what comes to mind for me is strategy. So we've got the education part, we've got the history, and I know it's Black History Month, But I think in a talk I had recently, we were challenging each parts of those words, like the black part, what does that mean? History, what does that mean? Month, what does that mean? And it was like, for me, more where I am in my journey at the moment, I'm more concerned, should we say, with the future. And so I feel like an evolution will have an element of the period of time that focuses on what the next steps will be and being able to review our progress so far, because I feel like that's been missing as well. I don't feel like there has been enough of a strategy that says, okay, what are our metrics to know if we're fulfilling this purpose? If our purpose is to have access to knowledge, what percentage of our population has access to this knowledge? How do we measure who knows what and what needs to be done? And what do we do with this information? Is it that we're trying to get to a certain percent? Do we want a certain percent of businesses to be black, books to be black, history to be black? Okay, cool. So how far are we from that target? For me, in a kind of like pragmatic way, I feel like an evolution would look like almost breaking it down to the metrics and saying, what do we need to go from here? And almost using that month, not necessarily as a month just to celebrate, but to focus and to say, okay, for this month, everything lock off, right? Mm-hmm. We're just going to go into this cryo chamber. And for a month, we're just going to strategize. What do we need to do for the next 12 months?
Mm-hmm.
Where are the holes? Where are the low-hanging fruits that we can get? Who are the communities who aren't being served? Who needs help? Who needs funding? Who needs connection? Who's trying to get home? Who's missing bits of, whatever it might be. I feel like, long story short, my evolution would look at not just the past, not just the present, but also the future.
Nice. Yeah, that's love it. That's really good. Nice. Okay, Essie, give us a little nugget. What are you thinking?
I'm coming from an education point of view, and I would think that I think the month needs to be used entirely, as you say. Scrap everything else. The whole month is dedicated to that. And in terms of that, it would be from nursery, primary, secondary, all of the schools at all levels, promoting, educating, you know, not just about food, music and dance, not just the focuses on the good stuff and on the nice stuff, the hard stuff, the difficult stuff to talk about, to create a discussion around it, that young ones can have discussions, positive discussions about it, and learn from that. We're not going to repeat that, because if you then are able to nurture their minds, they're going to grow with that, and they're going to teach as well. That's how then later on in the workplace things change, because it starts from small, starts from young. It's much more difficult when you're already an adult, you know, corporate, etc.
The politics has already come in and contaminated people's thoughts,
yes,
by that point.
Yes. So for me, you're going at nursery. We're talking about in education. We're always talking about, even as coming from secondary school, that certain things are too late when it comes to secondary school to teach those children. Okay. We're already saying, you know what, the preventive stuff should have happened in primary, should have happened in nursery. You know, the discussions around that. And that's what I feel needs to happen if we're going to talk about really strategizing a month where it's just about that, and we're looking at it from a nursery and primary and working in conjunction all together in that way, and even using companies to come into schools in that month to also teach about diversity, etc., why it's important, and experiences. And when you don't have that, what can happen, you know? And even to talk about, you know, we used to do exchange projects before, you know, back in the time, you know, if a school can say, okay, this time next year, a month's time, we would like, you know, to do a competition where young people, the winners will get to go to an area in Africa, wherever it's named, in a school, You know, I'm talking about real projects like that. And mm. that is not just one-offs. It's continued and it's continued, you know. But it starts from young. It starts from young.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, for sure. But I'm hearing, yeah, commitment, relationship, long-term, I'm hearing. Yeah, no, thank you, Essie. Thank you for that. Ivan, what about yourself? Oh, go on, Andre.
No, just saying, I love the idea of the exchange and doing it from the primary school level.
Yeah.
And how to make it something that it just becomes a household thing, you know, ingrained, as Ivan was talking about earlier, like just consistent. And in my head, I'm just picturing the scene, because a lot of the time when it comes to Africa, it just of my observation, it doesn't get the same coverage as other nations. So people just wouldn't even, like, for example, there's royal families who used to send their kids to like the Etons of Ghana. Do you know what I'm saying? Yeah. But no one really understands that, you know? So
Prince Harry spoke about in the interview, that's his favorite place to go to with Africa. That's his retreat.
Exactly. And like, I feel like having exchanges like that will give people a front seat, like an immersive experience to change. Because like, I mean, I said to you guys before, like when I first came here, I was baffed at why people only talked about me riding animals to school and getting water from how many kilometers away. And I couldn't understand it, because we had like drivers and all this kind of stuff. So if people see it from a young age and shatter that preconception, I think the impact will be huge.
Sorry, just to add on Andre, which is so relevant, because it's a story that my mum would say, that when she arrived here back in the 60s, 64, and she's in her 70s now, you know, she would always have said to her, you live in trees, isn't it? You know, back home, you live in trees. And she would just shake and think, actually, the house I had is bigger than what you have here, you know. So it's what's in here, you know. It's not children starving in Africa, or that's all the story is, you know.
Yeah.
Seeing often here is believing. So to have that ingrained.
Experiential, yeah, the impact of experience. Yeah, absolutely. Ivan, is there anything you want to add to that?
I just need to reiterate that those two last points you made were just fantastic. I like what Andre said about looking at what we're doing now and then seeing, is it actually working? Is it, you know, what kind of metrics do we want to hit in the future? And actually just being a bit more real about it, because I think that would be great. And I think what Essie said about, like, the prevention, and also similar to what you said earlier, Alex, about, you know, it starts off in school where we're teaching each other how to be good to each other. And then all of a sudden you get a little bit older and then that completely goes away. And that should be something that just carries on and on and on and on, where it's almost like, you know, you've got your key stage five, key stage one, up to whatever, of just how to, you know, deal with people of different nationalities, etc., etc., you know. So that's all I can add, and maybe just what I said about the social media thing, just be where people are.
Yeah, no, sure. I mean, if there's anything I think, you know, Andre and Essie have said quite a lot. If there's anything I'd like to add to that is, I've always been a big advocate for conversations in all aspects. Now, I mean, I was speaking to someone earlier on today who expressed maybe their reservations around maybe having a conversation about this and how it might open doors for maybe some more ignorant comments from people. But actually, what I feel has come out from this conversation is about giving people the chance to unpack certain things that, as Black people, we just do anyway. But it's almost like, okay, why do we need? Do we actually need this now? Because a lot of the legacies, we talk about legacies, and often a lot of our I don't know, like, for example, getting into dancing gave me an opportunity to travel to Europe. And then it made me realize, why did I travel to Europe? And I realized that for my mum and my dad, the only real interest was traveling is to the Caribbean to see things. And so back then, that would have been your norm. You just go back to the Caribbean and you come home. As I get older, I start to realize, but no, I can't go to this country and I can go to this country. And so what I'm saying is, I think it is time for us to have conversations within the Black community to begin to understand our own powers, our own understandings and perceptions, to unpack things with each other, to almost give each other empowerment. I do feel, in terms of change and in terms of development, you know, whether that's development for us or whether that's development to impact other people, I do think as a Black community, we have to be the leaders of that. So how do you empower people within the community, whether that's emotional support, intellectual support, just knowledge historically, having conversations where you're like, do you know what? At work, this is the kind of conversation I'm having. This is really getting on my nerves. And someone said, well, do you know what? Actually, this is how I look at it. And unpacking these conversations. So actually what everyone's doing is sharpening each other's tools to improve on having better interactions around in the, not only within the community, but wider community.
What one thing I wanted to add was a simple thing, mm-hmm. and it's observation.
Mm-hmm.
The Philippines, and I've been around a lot of Philippines, when a young person is showing respect to an older person, they will take their hand and they'll put their head on there like that. Now, you have to observe that really closely to notice those things. And even if, especially in schools, we're able to educate the children that in different communities, this is how we would respect our elders. Because I used to have a Nigerian boy, fresh from Nigeria. Whenever he would see me, he's virtually on the floor and coming to me like that. Now, others didn't understand. What's he doing? What's he doing? I said, he's showing respect, you know. So even for me, working in education, to show respect to your elders, if they were able to show in different cultures, this is how we show our respect. It could be the tonation of what you've said. It could be how you've put your head. But just to give that respect.
Mm.
Children can understand that from a very small age.
Mm.
Oh, in this community, you give respect by doing this, by doing that. In English, maybe we'll be saying thank you.
No, it's making my mom a cup of tea.
There you go. If it's the queen, you curtsy, you know, you curtsy or you bow if you're a man. So those simple things children can learn very quickly and they become cultured and ingrained. And you take that knowledge on as well. So sometimes it's the simple things and you grow from there.
110%. Wow. Well, I mean, listen, first of all, I just want to say thank you to both of you for coming on. There was meant to be a third person, but couldn't make it. And actually, you've both managed to fill in for three people. I hope that for anyone that's listening or that will listen in future, as this is now going to be a permanent link on YouTube, will take it would trigger some thoughts. And I'm also hoping if you haven't listened to any of our podcasts and this is the first one, please subscribe. Leave a comment because we are interested in how people think and what kind of reactions does it evoke for people, as this is something that, you know, there's no one person that has the right way. It's a combination of people building and bringing together and having back and forth, sometimes with tension, sometimes more smoothly. But we must get ourselves more acquainted with that environment of difficult and uncomfortable conversations. So if you've managed to stick with us for the whole hour and 15 minutes, I just want to say thank you for staying interested with all of us.
Can I just
throw some,
just as a final thought?
You're getting a freebie here.
Do it. Yeah.
Yeah. Just because we didn't really explore that, the other side of the coin about what the things would look like without a Black History Month. And so a thought that always crosses my mind when that question does come up is what would it look like without a Black History Month? And the way I can sometimes explore that thought is what countries don't have them and how do they work, how do they run, how do they meet their metrics, all that kind of stuff, and what cultures don't have them and what are the things that are needed for them to be prosperous without one. And that could almost be a way to feed into the strategy to make it almost obsolete.
Ivan, I don't know if there's anything you wanted to add.
Nah, you guys have said it all. You guys smashed it. Other than subscribe and drop a like and support us, keep a lookout for any of our next conversations. But beyond that, we've got a catalogue of 10 episodes. This is the 11th episode. You know, go and binge, do whatever you got to do. But thank you so much, everyone, for tuning in. So thanks to our guests and thanks, everyone.
Thank you for the invite.
See you around.
See you soon, everyone.